Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. In that big blue bag of mine, which should be coming, there's that steel cup. So when that comes, you can transfer that. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatade Shatarne Vandeham Sri Guru Shiyatav Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. The subject is the divine and demoniac natures. This is the title of the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So I'll just read the English translation of some of those verses. In the beginning of this chapter, Krishna describes the symptoms of the divine nature, and later he goes on to elaborate about the symptoms of the demoniac nature. So, the divine nature first of all. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharat, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. So there's a long explanation of that, but I'll just read the verses. Now, beginning of the description of the demoniac nature. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance, these qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. In this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called the divine and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length of the divine qualities. Now hear from me of the demoniac. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. They say that this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac, who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Thus, perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. Self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules or regulations. Well, there's the history of the world. Actually, the history of the world is summarized here in Bhagavad Gita in two words. The whole situation of this world. Dukhalayam ashashvatam. Dukhalayam means it's a place of unhappiness. And the ashashvatam means everything here is temporary. So that is a summary of the everything in the material world since time immemorial. So there you are. If you ever thought of studying history, going to university, spending years studying all these different battle of the Boyne and all this kind of thing, you don't have to bother. You can just get one Bhagavad Gita, and even two words, it covers everything. But more details are given here. First of all, the divine nature, which any sane person would rather be like that, than peaceful, self-controlled, tolerant. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, the divine qualities are explained in more detail. But especially at the present time, the demoniac qualities are more prominent. I just saw the poster advertising this lecture. There are two of them. One of them showed a satanic figure, some devil. So when we think of a demon or someone of demoniac qualities, we maybe think of the devil, especially in this in the Western world, and especially in a country like Ireland, which has a very strong Christian background. Until about one generation ago. Still. So, in Christian mythology, there's the idea of Satan, some nasty guy who is deluding us all. But here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes people of demoniac qualities, and these people who are, well, the Sanskrit word is asura. It means ungodly. And Srila Prabhupada, who translated these books, he translated that as demoniac and calls such people demons. So when we think of a demon, we might think of someone like that with some pointy ears and a pitchfork and ha ha ha, laughs like that. But the description that Krishna has given is of some people who may be very sophisticated people with nice suits and ties and who speak in a very educated and apparently cultured manner. But they are simply interested in increasing their own profit by any means. And they may talk very nicely, but the actual result of their policies and activities is to cause suffering to others. That's a great difference between a saintly person and a demoniac person. A saintly person is interested in benefiting others. And a demoniac person takes pleasure in giving pain to others, or they're so much concerned with their own gain or what they consider to be their own gain or promoting their own self-interest, that they don't care for the interest of others. Whole peoples can be moved, whole cultures can be destroyed, the whole ecosystem can be destroyed. Lies propagated. We're talking about history. I mean, the history books means just it's a bunch of lies, that's all. I mean, there's little fact there, but it's mostly little fact and a lot of fiction. But what you learn in history means what the people want you to believe, that's all. So, people are simply interested in a profit motive, or who consider that our people, we should promote the interest of our people at the expense of others. That was Hitler's philosophy. He said that, well, we're Germans and we're better and we need your land, so we're going to kick you out of it and take over. And nowadays they're more sophisticated, and they don't talk so bluntly, but they say that, well, you need democracy, so we're going to give you the gift of democracy, and if you don't want it, well, we'll bomb you into accepting it. And we'll also benefit your country by extracting the oil out of it, and in this way, the gift of democracy is given at the expense of many lives. So this is all demoniac. Why should people be like that? Talking about Hitler, I mean, Hitler, he was a demon. There's no, I mean, he was a bad guy, but there are plenty of others also. But as Winston Churchill said, that history will treat me kindly because I will write it. And he, after being thrown out of the prime ministership after the Second World War, he wrote the history of the Second World War, in which, surprise, surprise, he was painted as a great guy. He was only interested in the benefit of people. But if you see, I mean, the policies, just like, for instance, the firebombing of Dresden after the war was for all, I mean, Germans were defeated, but he just bombed his policy to bomb the place, and a few hundred thousand people were killed. Hiroshima was just a little thing compared with that. So, what drives people to such things? I mean, Hitler, Churchill, they must have been nice little babies at some time, right? Their mothers were goo-gooing them and gaga-ing them. What happened? How did they become such nasty people? When I see the present leaders, I must admit I don't know the name of the whatever, Taoiseach, or is it? What's his name? Cameron?
No, Brian
Cameron. Kelly,
sorry.
It's a Kelly.
Andrew.
It's a Kelly. It's a Kelly. Okay, he's qualified to be the leader of Ireland with a name like that. If he was old Kelly, it would have been even better. So, these guys, like, you know, Cameron and over there on the other side of the choppy waters. I guess they're around the same age as me. I guess if I'd have played my cards right and had been a good politician, you know, could have been you or me. Still, it could be you. You don't have to be an insignificant person walking the streets of Dublin. You could be the next Taoiseach. Yeah, and they'll play the trumpets when you walk past and salute you and all this kind of thing. And then you go to the European Parliament and you make all these kind of policies which destroy the small farmers and you know, completely just manipulating it. Actually, very stupid policies in many ways. It's just like, it's they set up the whole society in such a way that if for some reason the oil supply is stopped for a few days, they're in a complete mess. Whereas previously, people, they're growing their own food, living on their own little land, and it doesn't matter if the oil supply stops at all, because all that they need is right there. Whereas nowadays, you see, even in India, I see, it's ridiculous. People live in villages, and they buy vegetables. It's ridiculous. They grow hundreds of acres of one crop, and if that fails, they're in a big mess. And they buy vegetables, some rotten vegetables from 100 miles away. Just insane policies. But it's all designed for profit. So what makes people like that? What turns a little cute baby 50 or 60 years later into some scheming person who talks nicely and... Well, we're talking about these leaders. They're not really leaders. They're pawns in the hands of the big corporations. You can't become the leader of a country without the consent of the big corporations. Who are the corporations? You don't know. So what makes a person who they can just decide, okay, so now we're going to bomb this country and we're going to bomb that country and... We're going to make this policy by which all the traditional farming is spoiled. What makes people like that? What happens? Well, in the beginning of this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the basic illusion of this material world. That everyone here, that means you and me also, we partake in. And that is identification of the body as the self. If I ask, who are you? Someone will reply, I am Irish. I am 25 years old. I am a student. I am a thief. Years ago, I'm... the corner of Henry Street and O'Connell Street, it's about 35 years ago, I stopped someone and giving out books. I asked him, well, what do you do? He says, I'm a thief. So I asked him, well, what kind of thing? He said, mostly burglaries, break-ins, like that. So everyone has their profession. Thief, for those of you who don't know, Irish means thief. Just, that's with a famous Irish pronunciation. So, we identify with what is going on in relation with this body. But, Krishna teaches us in Bhagavad Gita, we are not the body. Before this body existed, I existed. When this body is dead, which is inevitable, I will continue to exist. But due to identification with the body, we think that our self-interest means to feed the body, clothe the body. That's but along with this comes the egoism of trying to promote oneself as better than others. I mean, our basic physical needs are very simple. Food, clothing, shelter. That's it. Those are the basic physical needs. So what is it that drives people to work hard, to get more money, and to show themselves better than others? Just like cars, a car is considered a necessity in the modern age, although... if you think about it, it's not really a necessity. Food, clothing, and shelter are necessities, but because we made such a complex society that to get the money, to get the food, instead of just growing your own food, you don't need money, but we think we need money, which is another kind of cheating. It's some little paper, and the government, if they need some more, they just make it. That's all. And which means every time they do that, the value of what's in your pocket goes down. So, these artificial necessities, just like a car. Okay, you need a car to get from A to B. So why are people concerned to have some flashy, latest, fashionable, expensive car just to show that they're better than someone else? That's the whole thing. That's another demoniac thing, this planned obsolescence. They can build a car which will last you your whole life and your kid's life also. I mean, they can build a car that will last 100 years, but they build it in such a way that it starts falling to pieces after the 12-month guarantee period. And its spare parts cost a lot of money, because if they build a car that would last all your life, they wouldn't have very good business, because then you'd only buy one car. But then they build a car which falls to pieces very soon, and it's good business. And you have to go on buying new cars, because you can't have an old car, because you have to look prestigious, right? So, what is it that drives us to show ourselves to be better, nations to be better? I'm proud of being British, because we smashed all the other countries and invaded them so many years ago, and we're still living on our glory. And in the meantime, although they threw us out a long time ago, but in the meantime we brainwashed everyone to think that we're the best, and they believe it. Right? That's why you're here. Come from India, is it?
Yeah.
So everything's better in the West, right? You have to dress like a Westerner. I have to talk in English. No, in India, no one's considered civilized unless they speak English. And the whole world is running on this idea that Western civilization, the Western world, that is the real civilization. So what is this egoism of promoting myself, my country, I am better than you? This is all illusion, which springs from the initial illusion of identifying with this body. I am not this body, but I presume myself to be. It feels like it, because seems something's going on there. Seems to be me. And if I get a toothache, I really feel it. So it seems like I'm the body.
The one's cold. I mean, most of the time in Ireland, you get a little respite now and then. When it's cold, you feel it, you know, that cold wind and the rain. So am I this body? So it feels like that, but we can understand that actually, this body is only chemicals, and I am not chemicals. Consciousness is not a product of chemicals. Emotions are not a product of chemicals. I am an eternal living being. Due to identification with this body, I suffer, and sometimes I enjoy. So we want to enjoy. We are eternal living spiritual beings. Our nature is to be happy. That's why every living being wants to be happy. It's an inherent nature. Every living being, everything they do at every moment is simply meant to produce happiness for themselves and to minimize anything that might impede that happiness, to overcome discomfort, or just like if it's cold, you close the window. Or on a more extreme level, if you don't like someone and they're all there harassing you, you shoot them dead. Well, I don't recommend it, but that's why people do it. There's one reason that they kill others. One main reason is because they think life for me would be better without this person. So, a simple solution. Because we think I should be happy, and we identify our happiness with what we think will make us happy in terms of the body and the mind. Therefore, persons who have no scruples in this matter, they can do anything because they think they'll be happy by doing so. But they don't actually become happy. It is a great paradox of this material world that the more one tries to be happy, the less happy they become. And we'll find generally the big rich people, as is stated here in Bhagavad Gita, they are less happy than others. They're especially full of anxiety. And you see that, that although they're very suave and sophisticated, but they're full of anxieties. Chintama parimayamcha. Prayantam upashyatam. They're always full of anxiety. So, this demoniac tendency where some people, then they have no qualms, I mean, they can just kill others. They don't care. They take pleasure in doing so. That comes from a perverse sense of I should enjoy. And my enjoyment means seeing myself better than others. And if we're not able to enjoy ourselves, because we don't actually enjoy through the senses, sensual enjoyment, then out of frustration we take pleasure in giving pain to others. But it all springs from the idea that I should be happy via this body, and via this mind, and via this ego. But it doesn't bring happiness. So the divine nature is to understand that I am happy by nature. I don't have to try to be happy through this body, because as an eternal spiritual living being, I am automatically happy. We don't have to bring anything. We don't have to buy the latest car. We don't have to watch something on TV. We don't have to go to a movie. We don't have to do anything, because we are by nature blissful. But because we are out of touch with our own actual nature, we think that we have to do so many things artificially to make ourselves happy. So that's the paradox of this material world. The more we try to be happy, the less we become happy. Because we don't know, we're so out of touch with ourselves, we don't know what it means to be happy. And we think, we may think that happy means to, drink and go out and wild and shout and scream but that's not actual happiness. That may be an increase of the adrenaline. But it doesn't bring satisfaction. The basis of happiness is inner peace. Ashantasya kutasukam. One who is not peaceful within themselves, how can they actually be happy? People are not happy within themselves. Therefore, they want to have lots of sex and lots of parties and loud, boisterous music and shouting and screaming, mindless. But it doesn't satisfy the soul. And therefore they want more of it, and more of it, just to cover their own inner dissatisfaction. And then when you're still dissatisfied, then you take more intoxication, different kinds of intoxication, because of dissatisfaction. So, who are we actually? This Bhagavad Gita gives this education to understand who we actually are and how we can come to the platform of eternal happiness. That is our nature, but it's covered. Something like a madman. A madman means someone who cannot function in a normal way in human society. So, the disjointed, dysfunctional. So we're all like that. We're all madmen in as much as we're trying to be happy in a manner that doesn't bring us happiness. And even though we should be able to perceive that, and we should be able to perceive that everyone in this world, everything they do is for happiness, but people aren't happy, so we should be intelligent enough to see that, well, something's wrong here, and try to find out something else, instead of following everyone else, instead of just thinking, well, maybe I don't have enough sex, or I don't have enough money, or I don't have a big enough house, or... You think, well, maybe there's something just wrong with the whole program here. But we don't think. We blindly follow. It's the blind following the blind. So Krishna is giving the education. Simple point. It's actually a very simple point to understand. That we are eternal living beings. We are meant to be eternally happy. But because of accepting a wrong concept of reality, therefore we suffer in this material world. So what is the right concept? What is the actual concept? And Krishna, who is speaking this, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not exactly the rival of Satan, who's known as God in the Western world, the idea of a God who's struggling with some Satan, and just about manages, we hope, to be on top of him. Well, it looks like Satan's on top, not God, in this world, if there is a Satan. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead means the Supreme Controller of everything, the Supreme Spirit, and the Supreme Reservoir of all pleasure. Of course, God means all-powerful, Supreme Controller, but the main point about him is that he's all-beautiful and all-blissful, and we all have our eternal relationship with him. We're all meant to partake of the nature of God, which is all bliss. So that bliss is in relation to Krishna. It's a relationship of the served and the servant. We are servants of Krishna, but that service, it's not like some drudgery in a factory, but it's blissful activities. Krishna is this reservoir of pleasure. Where does pleasure come from? Pleasure comes from sharing with others. So Krishna has blissful activities. You might be surprised to know what they are. He has cows. He takes cows. These are spiritual cows, by the way. They're not so unfortunate as to get slaughtered, all over the world. Krishna plays on the flute very sweetly. He dresses very nicely. In rustic style, not so sophisticated, but in very beautifully. He sings very nicely, he dances very nicely. He has friends, boyfriends and girlfriends, and they just enjoy being with each other. That is reality. The reality of sharing love, loving activities with Krishna. And there's joking, and all kinds of apparent rivalry, which is all rivalry, inasmuch as different devotees are trying to get the attention of Krishna, but it's devoid of the aspect of envy. Where there is love, there is no envy. In this material world, because there is no real love, then there is envy. And then one person wants to cause harm to others. When one is so much devoid of love, then one wants to harm others. So a person in divine consciousness, they cannot want to harm others, they can only want to benefit others. So that consciousness, the divine consciousness, that means Krishna consciousness. To be conscious of Krishna. We're all conscious. That's the meaning of being a living being. That's what differentiates us from dull matter, like this. We're conscious living beings. We have emotions, feelings, desires, pain, pleasure. But that consciousness, when we are conscious that I am constitutionally part of Krishna, I am meant to be with Krishna and serve Krishna, that consciousness is pure consciousness. And devoid of that is material consciousness. And when material consciousness becomes extreme, that is called demoniac consciousness. So to some extent, everyone in this material world partakes in the demoniac consciousness. And actually very demoniac activities are considered quite normal in the modern world. Just like, a very obvious example, we always hear about how this Hitler and the Holocaust and killing so many people, millions of people. How many was it? You're from Poland. How many is supposed to have killed? A few million? A couple of million? You're also from Poland. 6 million, 7 million, they don't know exactly. But there's a daily Holocaust going on. How many cows, sheep, chickens are being killed? You would think, well, they're only animals, but they also feel. They also suffer. They're also living beings. We don't think of that. We think if one human gets killed, we think that's very bad, but the animals, they suffer. So, abortions, rampant abortions, everywhere, just considered normal. It's also killing. So, what is actually demoniac has become normal in modern society. And as we can't expect a very good result in a society which is based on animal killing. We can't expect people to develop divine qualities. Now people all over the world are afraid of terrorism. Anywhere, anytime, there can be terrorism. But we ourselves are performing, the whole society is based on terrorism. The animals are tortured and slaughtered. So this all comes about due to lack of spiritual knowledge of who we are, what is our nature, how we should act in this world in a manner that we can revive our divine consciousness and not be victimized by this demoniac consciousness. So in the modern world, this, the whole society, from it's demoniac actually. You know, the educational system inculcates in us that we have to work hard to get money so we can live. And no one ever tells us that, well, you could just, for thousands of years, people just had a little land and grew their own food and you can live very simply. But no, you have to work hard and study so much, and then you get it. If you get a job, if you don't get a job, then you're under a bridge, living under a bridge. So, in teaching us, and they force you to go to school, and they force you to send your kids to school, so that they can brainwash you from the beginning in all this stuff. So the whole society is, at the present time, is demoniac society. And then what do you expect? I mean, you're going to get your Monsantos and all this. When the whole aim of society is just getting, it's based on competition. You should get ahead yourself and enjoy. You have to enjoy yourself. And when the aim is that you should just enjoy yourself, there's no social responsibility. And it's just, in the modern age, just normal that people, when their parents get old, they leave their parents, and then the parents get old and they die in some home, miserable, and it was a normal thing that previously people would look after their elderly parents as their elderly parents looked after them when they were children. But nowadays no one even thinks of that. Because we're just concerned with our own self. So everyone's lonely, alone. You can't trust your husband, your wife, your children, your parents. Can't trust anyone. It's because this idea that everyone should just get ahead by themselves. This demoniac principle is being promoted. So this Krishna Conscious Movement is meant for promoting the spiritual understanding by which we can lead a divine life and come out of this material world and go to the spiritual world and live with Krishna eternally, blissfully. But it's not simply otherworldly. It's also concerned with giving people direction on how they can live in this world without being victimized by this demoniac society. And probably the whole fabric of it is so deep that probably the people who are the instruments of this demoniac society, they probably don't even realize that it's demoniac. The people who are killing the animals, they don't think it's wrong. The people who are educating in the schools, they think that they're helping the children. I don't know, nowadays, teachers and anything, for the most. I mean, I know one teacher when I was at school, which was quite a long time ago. He told me that, I'm a teacher because you have short hours, long holidays, and he didn't care to teach, that's all. For him it was convenient, that's all. He had no interest in benefiting the children or any such thing. But many people think, even the people who think they're doing good, that you give charity, and you give to some charity and you think you're doing good. But many times these charities, they're just messing up the people they're supposed to be helping by their policies. So thorough spiritual education is required. Simply be good, be nice, smile, that saying such things isn't going to help us to be free from demoniac consciousness. Thorough spiritual education is required, and practical techniques for purifying the consciousness are required. So the practical technique, well, there are many techniques. The most basic of them is chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Repeated chanting of the names of Krishna purifies the consciousness. So that we can be free from the forces of lust and greed and acquisitiveness and illusion, which as if compel us to act in ways which aren't beneficial neither for ourselves nor for anyone else. So spiritual knowledge is required. Teaching in spiritual knowledge is required, and practical purification is required. So this movement is attempting to impart that. So that's a very brief overview. And you can go into detail. I mean, we don't need to write books. There are already so many books written by people detailing the cheating of the educationists, the cheating of the Monsantos and others, and the McDonald's and all this kind of thing. So that's already there. Anyone who's a little bit awake can understand this, but what's the solution? They have no solution. So we're purporting that even if you got rid of the Monsanto as well, then someone else would come up and do some other scam. It's like in the what used to be called Eastern Europe, they got rid of the communist governments, but now they have the benefits of Western civilization. So the benefits and the downside also. So going from one material paradigm to another doesn't actually benefit us. We have to know the whole picture. Communists, capitalists, both of them have the wrong idea that we are here in this world to enjoy it. So, a thorough spiritual education is required, and a thorough overhaul of our lives, individually, at the individual level, at the societal level. Just band-aid solutions aren't going to help much. Complete overhaul is required. At the present time, you see, there's someone who's cultivating demoniac qualities, they're considered the best person, someone who has money, by any means, they're considered very respectable. That is, if you, a gentleman means someone who's got a lot of money. That's all. And how they get the money, that doesn't matter so much. The Vedic culture the most respected person is the person who lives with the least. That doesn't, not because they're just what's called a failure, they couldn't get a job or whatever, but because they don't have covetousness, they're content to live with very little. That is considered advanced. Not the person who has many acquisitions, but the person who is content to live with very little because internally they are full. They don't need to acquire so many things and show off their prestige because they're satisfied within. So all these topics are discussed in Bhagavad Gita. So please study this Bhagavad Gita as it is and enrich your life or come alive. Yes, please do. Can you say a little louder, please? I'm sorry, maybe I'm losing my hearing, but I can't hear you.
Early on, you were kind of saying that the bombing was
bombing Dresden.
And then something else, I don't think the whole thing that Churchill should be compared in the same context as Hitler in that regard.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of bombing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just an example, but it may not be the most appropriate. But the point is that both had the same mentality of promoting our country and to hell with others.
In many ways, Churchill was a great
man. Okay, that's your opinion. All right. He also engineered, by the way, the literal starvation of literally millions of people in India. Recently, they declassified the secret papers, and who was that? The governor of India, the 10th Curzon. They made policies by which the grain was taken from the rice and wheat was taken from India, and people literally starved. I mean, the idea was that they have to join the army. And the governor of India was writing to Churchill and saying, "Why are you doing this?" And Churchill wrote back that anyway they deserve it. They're horrible people with a nasty religion, and they breed like rabbits, so they deserve this. Well, that's pretty bad, isn't it?
Know, yeah.
By his policies, he made a Holocaust. So anyway, we're not here to discuss the relative merits and demerits of Hitler and Churchill, but I'm just making the point that people in the big people in big power, they tend to do all kinds of horrible things, and they can, the main point I was making there is that history usually presents a myth about people, and it often promotes people as being good when they're not very good at all. So that's a general principle. If they don't like the example, well, maybe you could furnish another one.
It's
pretty bad, isn't it? Warping
sex is the worst
thing. Yeah, anything else?
Isn't it a person's karma to behave in a certain way? You're talking wider
sticks. Isn't it a person's karma to behave in a certain way? Well, certainly different people, we're born with a set, we bring forward from the past life a certain mentality. But in human life, we're meant for improvement. We have intelligence. Of course, animals have intelligence also. In many ways, certain animals can have more intelligence than humans. Just like if you were asked to make a bird's nest, you couldn't do it nearly as good as a bird could do it, right? So animals have intelligence, but they don't have discrimination between right and wrong. And they don't have the possibility of philosophical inquiry into the nature of life. So that intelligence is there in human life, and everyone should use that to improve themselves and do what is right, understand what is right and what is wrong, and act in such a way to improve themselves. Now, some people, they come into this world with a whole baggage brought in from their previous life of demoniac desires. That's a fact. But still, there is a sense of right and wrong. Just like Hitler, he exercised his sense of right and wrong. That right means to invade other countries, and wrong means to be Ukrainian, a Pole, or something like that. So it's interesting that in the Nuremberg trials, and incidentally, only the Germans were tried for war crimes. None of the victorious party, none of them were tried for war crimes. But it's interesting that certain of the accused people, they said, well, we were just following orders. We didn't do anything wrong, we were just following orders, because in the German culture at that time, you just had to follow orders, and that was considered right, and they didn't think they had any responsibility. But it was presumed by those who were trying them that they should have exercised their discrimination as to what is right and what is wrong. And if you got some order to round up Jews and gypsies and others and send them off to concentration camps where they would be killed, then you should have not cooperated with that. So, and that one, that Schindler, he became famous at the risk of his life, for later he became famous for surreptitiously defying that. So even in that scenario, it is understood that even if the whole atmosphere around you is pushing you to do something which is not right, and everyone else thinks it's right, you are supposed to use your own intelligence and discrimination to understand that this is actually wrong. So that facility is there in human life. If we get association with people who can point out to us what is right, that is our very great fortune, and we should take that opportunity. But actually, every human, because they have a sense of the intelligence to discriminate, they should also have the conscience to gravitate toward that and to seek out that which is right. And we find here at the end of this chapter, I didn't read all the verses, that Krishna says that a person should understand what is right and what is wrong according to the directions of scripture and act accordingly. So it's incumbent. And those who are demoniac, they don't care to do that. They don't care to find out what is right and what is wrong according to the scripture, and they just act whimsically according to their own ideas. Yeah.
Another example that I was thinking of how so-called leaders in society can be demoniac is that Dhamma and my parents live on the Kildare and Leash border. I think I said this to you before, Maharaj. There's so much land, and it's really fertile land. You know, you see corn and everything growing really fast, sugar beet and everything. But if I ask my father when I'm driving by all the different farms, what's this one and that one, each size, he said, they're all set aside. And what does set aside mean? And he said, it means the farmers...
Oh, they're paid not to grow anything. Yeah.
You know, even my father, you know, his...
It's so crazy, isn't it?
He said, God gives the sun and the water, but they're giving these people money not to grow food. And then they send a package of charity of AIDS to Africa once a year and say how wonderful the Irish government is. We're giving these people some food when we're banning growing food to keep the price of food up.
It's so mad, isn't it?
So
strange. Policies. Mad, they're mad, just crazy.
We have also recently really banned harvesting peat. Peat is a deep crop.
Yeah, and sometimes you see they grow the crop and then in the end they don't harvest it and it just all rots. I mean, all kinds of crazy things.
If you harvest peat, you're around, you're arousing.
Yeah. I mean, if you start talking about it, then you're going all day and all night. There's no end to the crazy, nasty things that are going on in the world. And we should find a solution. Jai Hare Krishna. Yeah.
Maharaj, does the demoniac influence come outside of this planet as well? Is there a higher demoniac influence?
Higher or lower? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, the personality of Kali is there. Yeah, but I wouldn't worry about that too much. You know why? Because Prabhupada didn't worry. Ultimately, it's up to us to decide what to do and what not to do. The best thing to do is chant Hare Krishna. So shall we do that for a few minutes more?
Yeah.
Do you have prasadam for everyone?
I
have
prasadam on the street that first or after.
Where are those bags? My bags? Can you bring them up? Because I've got books in them.